Hey y'all, I'm Simon Zaterka. I am ready to take you on an adventure. I'm on a mission to tell stories of chefs of all kinds. I want to see what they're doing, seeing how they got into the business, check out the cool stuff that they're doing now, and some lessons they can share with all of us. Because there's more than just one kind of chef, and I'm out to tell the story. So, without further ado, this is Chef Journeys. Let's check it out. I am so excited for you guys to be here. With me, I have Gilda Sanchez-Menick, one of those people who does something I am not super comfortable doing, and that's feeding a whole lot of people all at once, whether it be banquets or catering or big special events. This lady has done and seen a whole bunch. So, Gilda, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here to play with us.
Thank you for having me.
You know, let's just jump in. Tell me how you got into the restaurant business. Tell me how you got into cooking, and how it's all started for you.
Well, it started when I was a little girl with my grandma. Like, I loved watching her cook, so I would sit down and watch her cook, and then I would try to help her, and she would never wanted my help. She said, just stay over there and just watch what I'm doing. And then as I grew older, even in my teens, like, it would be family parties, and my aunts and my mom and my grandma would be cooking, and they didn't want any of, like, my help. So I'm just like, oh, my God, this is, you know, I want to learn how to cook the way my grandma cooked. You know, and my grandma was El Salvadorian, so I wanted to learn how to make the pupusas. I wanted to learn how to make the pan con chumpe and the frijoles, arroz casimiento, like, but they would never let me cook. My grandma would never let me get in there, you know, and so my journey started. I went to culinary school, like, in early 2000s. I went to college, regular college. College was not for me at all. Like, it was not fun.
I know that. I know that feeling.
I know. And then, because I'm more like hands-on type of a person, I need to get in, you know. I had two daughters at the time, so it was a little tricky for me to go to culinary school and then have two little ones. And then after culinary school, I started at Jonathan Club, which is where I first got my chops. And it was, I mean, to me, working in the kitchen is so easy. You know, I already had the discipline. I had the drive. You know, I was hungry and I wanted more. And that's what the Jonathan Club helped me. It helped me to develop to be the chef that I am today. I started as, you know, an on-call cook. Let me go back. It's so funny because we worked with the same chef, and Christian, and he's the French chef, and he interviewed me with another chef. His name was Christophe Pateau. He was the banquet chef. My whole interview was in French. I did not understand what the hell the whole interview was about. And then all of a sudden, Christian would say, if you fuck up, it's his fault. Like, okay. That was, like, the funniest, like, interview I've ever had. But that's Christian for you, you know? Christian is very direct. So anyway, yeah. Explain back, yeah. You know, like, he was a tough cookie. He was a really tough cookie, but I was in for it. You know, like, I didn't take what he said, you know, personal. Because, I mean, why? You know, I learned how to take it, and then just keep on going, just keep on, you know, keep the grind, you know, and we had tons of catering events there, from, like, I remember Joe mentioning the after game when USC played, and then all the members would come in and we would just be making, I mean, charcuterie boards, cheese plates, like, you know, veggie trays, like, crazy, amounts of food there. And then we did a lot of, like, plated catering events, where we would We would do like a 3-course meal or a 4-course meal. And Christian would say, everything in banquets is the same. Every plate needs to be the same. So that's like what what Christian has taught me is still engraved in me. And his philosophy is ingrained in me. Like, he's one of those chefs that made a big impact in my career. And I use some of his philosophies, you know, when I run my kitchens.
Awesome.
Yeah. So you know, joined Jonathan Club. I was the banquet assistant there. There was no room for growth. So then I ended up running a little restaurant in downtown LA. And this was my first crack at a restaurant. You know, like I've never ran a restaurant because I was in the private club. So that was my first crack at it. Did that for 6 months. And then I started, I was the executive sous chef at the Millennial Biltmore in downtown LA. And again, back to catering. Like, hotels are big stuff. Yeah. It is the big stuff. But like I said, the skills you need to be very disciplined, organized. Like I said, the conductor of the band. You know, yeah. You have to plan out the party, how you're gonna execute the event, your ordering. You know, you have to make sure you have enough food, if it's a buffet, or you have to have enough proteins, and starch and veg for your plated events. And then you have to, you know, account like 50% of the overage of the event, because working with catering, the catering salespeople is whoo.
Last minute. Let me ask you. You know, I think it's, first of all, it's worth noting that you and I worked together at the Jonathan Club. When I first got there in 2006, I just couldn't, like, I'd been running mostly restaurants, and all of a sudden here I am, and I'm looking around and I'm like, look at these people go. And it was you and Joe, the banquet chef, and you guys were just zooming back and forth and back and forth and up and down. And it always kind of took me as like, man, like, I don't know. I'm used to like, you play, the ticket pops out of the machine and I cook the food and then it goes away. And for you guys, there was just like, I always felt like you were working like 1, 2, 3 days in advance. So you were at the Jonathan Club. You got the opportunity to do a single restaurant. Then you headed to the Millennium Biltmore. I mean, tell me about how, that's a pretty big place all by itself. Tell me about that.
Oh, so the Millennial Biltmore, we had, I don't remember how many rooms, but on Christmas, the most busiest time of the year, it's like all the rooms would be rented out for events, for corporate events, for Christmas parties. And then that's another thing, like you have to learn how to organize and time everything. It's all about timing too. You know, it's all about your prep, your timing, your ordering, you know, your staff. I mean, there's a lot of components in catering. It's insane.
Absolutely.
So the coolest thing about the Biltmore that they had, and this is the only kitchen that I ever seen it in, is they have conveyor belts on in the kitchen. So, and instead of moving the plates by hand, you would just set up your team, you know, with starch, veg, protein, sauce, and garnish, and then you just run it through the conveyor belt, and then you have somebody at the end, like a steward. He would put the lid on top and then start stacking all the plates in the hot boxes, and then the hot boxes would go to according to what event and what room or that it needed to go to. So it was very well orchestrated. I mean, the guys were there forever, so they already knew what they were doing. Right. You know, like if you have a well-oiled machine, you know, the staff already knows what to do. The cooks already know what to do. You're just there to be the conductor, making sure everything is on time and going out in a timely manner. You know, everything's consistent, because consistency is key in our world, you know. Yeah. I was there for a couple of years, and then I moved up to Hotel Mayan, which is another hotel in Long Beach. Did a short stint there, And then I started going more into the restaurants. I opened up a couple of restaurants in LA. You know, they didn't make it through COVID. And then I started working at for Legends, which is an OU, which I opened up OUE Skyspace and the US Bank. And everybody's all like, there was food up there. I'm like, yeah, we did catering events there. We did quinceañeras, weddings, you know, at corporate events, you know, high profile events like BET. And we were just doing, you know, what we did. And we were working out of a little closet. Like there was no space there. It was just a little closet. And that's another thing about catering is like you always have to make do with the space that you have.
Right.
You know, map out your space and see, okay, this is how we're gonna do it, guys. You know, like, you know, it's I worked in small itty bitty kitchens and I worked in big kitchens. And this was like the smallest kitchen. It wasn't even a kitchen. It was just like a staging room, you know, and we made things happen. And that's what you do. You know, you always got to make things happen. You know,
use the closet, and make magic.
Yeah,
all your,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So then during 2020. And then the beginning of 2020, I got transferred like to go to work at SoFi Stadium. I asked the regional chef, she's like, hey, do you have any positions available? And she's like, I have one just perfect for you. Got the job and COVID hit, boom. So it was insane because I'm working in the kitchen wasn't open yet. We were just working on systems at the time. You know, I didn't know what I was doing because this is huge. This is a stadium. This is not a hotel. It's not a restaurant. This is a whole ass stadium. Like there's so many components to it. And I remember walking in the morning, had to put my PPE on. I guess I don't remember what it's called, but it was my hat, my glasses, I mean, your vest, and then your big old mask that you had to wear. And it was very interesting because like we were see the construction work, like the construction workers going around the whole, like, it's, yeah, you see the plumbers, the carpenters, like everybody there, and just all these people made this happen. Like they built this huge, the biggest stadium in the world. And it, I mean, to me, that was an honor, you know, like it was awesome to just drive into work every day and see the stadium, you know, like I'm part of this, you know. So I was leading the catering team. And we were the only ones that were my department was the only department that was working, that was functioning during COVID because there was no fans that year. So we had to, you know, make menus, make catering menus, make game day menus, you know, talk to vendors, open up new accounts. You know, like it's just like opening up a restaurant, you know, but in a larger scale.
Right.
Like there was a lot. It was a lot. And I had a great executive sous chef too that I helped, you know, coach him into like teach him how to do large volume because he was a restaurant chef. So I had to train him how to become a catering chef, which is
That's awesome.
Night and day. So we had 200 BEOs on the first game. A BEO is a banquet event order. And we're sitting there and we're going through all the BEOs. And I told him there has to be a better way. He was good on the computer. There was only one menu for game day. So I told him, okay, this is what we're going to do. All the menu items and then the BEO numbers. And that would be our prep list. That was that we called the matrix. It was the best thing that we could have done for our day to, you know, for execution. But we didn't know what the hell we were doing.
Yeah.
No, we're not stadium chefs.
So tell me, I mean, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about 10,000 cheeseburgers? Are we talking about 1,000 cheeseburgers?
Yeah, like 3,000, 4,000, you know, cheeseburgers. And mind you, my staff was only 20 people.
Of course.
So I had 20 people that we were just pumping out food. So it would take us about a week to like prep out our week for one day.
That makes sense.
But the first day of our first game, like, I was so nervous. Like, what am I getting myself into? You know, I was in the bathroom, like, vomiting because I was so nervous, you know, like the best way I can, like, I can explain it is, like, you know, 8 Mile, when, you know, Rabbit's in the toilet, you know, vomiting mom spaghetti, you know, that was me. I'm just, you know, like, chefs always want to be perfect. Chefs always want seamless execution and, you know, that's how we are. There's no room for error, you know? And I mean, that's part of our, like, I don't know how we live.
Definitely wired into how we are, for sure. I definitely know that that some of that is coming from Christian, because he would push us all to make sure that everything we did was awesome. And yeah, that it was nothing of just, you know, something that was going to blow somebody's mind. So, yeah. It's hard to hear somebody say, "Oh, I was so nervous that I wanted to die," but it's what it is sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, I come from a slightly different world, but I absolutely empathize with, you know, pushing yourself to make something just phenomenal and amazing. Yeah. Whether it be a chicken tender or whether it be some fancy meal, it doesn't really matter. It's gotta be right.
It's got to be fresh. The first one has to taste the same as the last one that goes out of that kitchen, you know?
Absolutely.
And as I also, like, train my team, you know, with the philosophy of, we're nourishing these people. We're nourishing the players. We're nourishing the referees, the cheerleaders. Like, put your best energy that you have, you know, your good energy in your food, because they can taste it. They can taste the energy in the food. You know, and I go, these people are our paychecks, you know, we feed them, you know, and they pay us. So we've got to make sure that we give them the best food as possible, you know, and if you have a bad day, you're like, go outside and take a lap, you know, go outside and, you know, walk around the whole stadium, breathe, you know, try to push it out of you. Because I don't want that negative energy in my food unless it's the opposing team. So yeah, that was my whole thing. Like, even during Super Bowl, I mean, it was awesome because, like, every game day, we started off with the Eye of the Tiger. 4 o'clock in the morning, breakfast, we're ready to roll up breakfast burritos. And then the Eye of the Tiger, you know, from Rocky, we would play that song just to, like, inspire the cooks, you know, get their blood glowing, you know, like, and they would be so happy, you know, because it's game day, you know, and we did that for Super Bowl. And I told the guys, it's like, you know what, we're going to win today. The Rams are going to win today. We're going to win, like, put that energy in your food. And so, and the Rams won, you know. that's how I feel. Like, you put the energy in your food and people will be happy, and, you know, you'll be absolutely happy too.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly, doing the big events is something that takes a special set of skills. For you, like, I guess, what are the biggest obstacles? What are the things that make it harder than something else? Or what are the things that make it more gratifying?
Well, working with the catering sales team would be kind of, like, the hardest thing to work with, you know, like, there's some good ones out there. I mean, when I was at the, I know Jonathan Clun, Darren was awesome. She knew her shit. Remember Darren?
I do.
She knew her shit.
She was amazing.
Yeah. Awesome. She knew what she was doing. Like, she knew the client. She knew, like, how to work with the clients. She knew how to work with the chefs, you know, giving us information, full information. Biltmore, same, you know. We had really good sales team there. But, you know, you have to train them to make sure product knowledge and what's in the plate and what's in the food and what's in, you know, and that to me, that was like the hardest to work with, and some other properties.
So good information is what you're telling me. That is the
good information. I need to know everything. Like, I need to know how, like, how many people, food allergies, you know, because people come up with a new one every year. So like, what's the newest trend on a food allergy, right? So yeah. I would have, you know, like that, and you know, like, you know, it's that would be the hardest. But like, to me, like, systems, putting in systems, see how things work, you know, especially when you're starting brand new, like, you need to see what you need to play out every scenario that can go wrong that day,
right?
You know, and once you have that scenario, then you're like, what's the solution? You know, I had a party of 3,000 people at the stadium, and I ran through every bad thing that could happen, that can go wrong. But thank God everything came. It was well orchestrated. But I mean, that's how my brain is. You know, like, chefs have a different way of a different thought process. You know, like, that's all I think about. I don't sleep because I'm running scenarios in my head. Oh my. So I'm like, damn, well, how am I gonna do this? You know, like, our brains are always thinking. I don't know, the clocks, the wheels are always turning. And
my wife calls that the third shift. You go to sleep,
the third shift,
go to sleep and you have nightmares about work, and it's just, you wake up and you're like, man, I'm exhausted, I worked all night.
It's really insane, you know, like, but that's what we do. That's because we love it, you know.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I love what I do. Like, I need a knife in my hand all the time. Like, you know, like, I hate it when I'm in the computer. I hate, you know, but I have to do that work. I have to do the admin side to it, you know. Yep. But I just love to be in there. I love to, like, it's a second nature to me. I don't know. It's like weird, like the deli cut. You make salad dressing, and it comes exactly to the 32 ounce. Like, you made a perfect amount. Yep. You put it in the deli cut. It's perfect. 32 ounces. Like, it's something that you know how to. It's like second nature to you. Like, it's I don't know. It's weird. It's harder, you know. It's hard to explain if when you don't know what you're doing. You know.
Yes. Yes, it is. People, I think the one for me is, how long does that take? I'm like, I have no bloody idea. When it's ready, it is done.
When it's ready.
When I poke it.
Yeah, when you have like that internal time clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're already, like, your body's, your mind's off 5 minutes, boom. And then you go 5 minutes in the oven, pull it out, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's just something, it's weird.
That's repetition, right? Like. Yeah. I mean, when you, whether it's cooking a steak or cooking whatever it is, you know, doing that eggplant Parmesan that you guys used to do. And it was just, I used to just trip out on how much eggplant you guys would slice super, super, super thin, and just all these millions of layers. And I thought to myself, I don't know if I have that. Like, I'm just a different person. You know, it's just not like, you and I are both chefs, and we both got thing, but man, I just, like, doing the big huge volume always just made me, like, kind of scratch my head. I don't know,
that's the same way that I feel towards what you do. Yep. Like, damn, one thing at a time, like, shit.
Yep. One thing at a time,
and the organization in your head too, like, it's a whole different type of organizing, you know, like, you have all these tickets, so you're like, it's like you're organizing, you know, like, your tables. Yep. You know, and catering, we already have it organized, you know, and this is like thinking, like, critical thinking, like, and that's something a lot of chefs, the newcoming chefs are coming in right now, that lack of is critical thinking. Yeah. Not like us, where we just like,
man, I'm gonna put what you just said on a loop, because, man, and that is the truth. I see so much of it all the time, where it's just some of the young folks, somebody hasn't taught them to stop and really think about what they're doing and how it's being done.
Mm-hmm.
That's the message right there. Critical thinking.
Critical thinking.
Love it.
My one of my chefs that I worked at in the Biltmore, like, he would tell me, like, you know, like when you're in the weeds, because we do get in the weeds in catering too. When you're in the weeds, you know, as a chef, you have to step out of the scenario, like what's going on. You have to step out, see what's going on, and then figure it out, come up with a solution, and then go back in and then solve it. Like, yeah, and that's what I've taught a lot of my cooks that too. Like when they're in their head a lot, you know, because working in the kitchen you can get emotional too. But it's time to think logical. You know, like you have to like pull yourself out of your emotions and then start thinking logically and go back in there and solve your problems or your issues or how you're gonna, you know, cook or how you're gonna like get ahead of the game, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, like in a restaurant setting, it was similar, but it was always like, I just started to notice the same people do the same thing every day, right? The salad guy didn't like to leave the line when he could leave the line. And so then 5:30 would come and all of a sudden his salads would just start to get a little smaller. Why? Because he's running out of lettuce on the line.
Yeah.
Right. And so it'd be that whole thing of like, I'd tap somebody on the shoulder and go, why don't you go fill that guy's station for him? And just give him a little helping hand. And later the cook would come to me and go, how did you know I need lettuce? I'm like, you run out of lettuce every day at the same time for the same reasons, because you don't like to leave the line. And so I think it just kind of comes down to like paying attention. I think there's just things we can all pay attention to, right? Just slow down and just look around. And like I say, people do the same thing. They have the same habits. They have the routines that they do, that some of them are great, some of them are not. But I think us as leaders having the ability to see those repetitive habits and repetitive patterns. I think that it all comes down to repetition, right? That's how, that's how you know when to pull something out of the oven, because you can feel it, because, well, it's like been like that the last 1,000 times I did. Well, awesome. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you just coming in and talking a little bit about like what it is that you've done and what the journey that you've been on. I think it's part of this podcast, it's part of this whole Chef Journeys thing, is just helping people to understand that there's all sorts of different ways to go about being a chef. So I just want to really thank you for coming on and talking to us and checking it out. I'd love to have you come back at some point and see kind of what the further reaches of the journey have become.
Awesome. Yeah.
So
thank you.
You got any last thoughts for me?
I do. Like, I just want to tell younger chefs out there, you know, just keep on grinding, because that's the way you're going to make it to the top, is to grind, you know. But at the same time, like, don't forget your family. You know, I didn't get to raise my daughters because I was grinding in the kitchen, and because I wanted that executive chef title, you know, and I just want you guys to be out there and, you know, make sure that you're okay, you know, and take care of yourself too. You know, don't get sick over your job. It's not worth it at the end, you know, like go to the doctor, go to the dentist, you know, like shit that we never.
Yeah. That's great advice. It really is. I think that more young chefs need to hear, you got to work hard, but you got to really pay attention to taking care of yourself, because honestly, if you don't do it, nobody else will. Yeah. Well, listen, Gilda, thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. And for all you out there, please like and subscribe. Find Chef Journeys wherever you find your podcasts. And we'll see you next time.